chairman. I'm coming apparently from the younger generation because I had not opportunity to serve together in any institution yet. But it's a great occasion for me to be with you in this very honorable panel. Good morning, Excellencies, Director General, Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very grateful for this opportunity that we have been able to co-organize this event at the WTO and for the interest of all of you expressed to this initiative. I would like to commend the growing interest of WTO in the issue of the trade in natural resources and in energy in particular. 2 years ago, the World Energy Trade Report, as was mentioned earlier, devoted to this topic, made an invaluable and timely contribution to the debate on the application of the multilateral trade rules to the trade in energy. That report included a chapter on the Energy Charter. The Energy Charter Secretariat also had an opportunity to organize a session during the WTO Public Forum of 2011 on international governance on energy trade. During this event, it became clear that the interest in energy trade and interaction between the rules of the Energy Charter Treaty with WTO agreements is really high. Why does the application of the multilateral trade rule to the energy receive more and more attention? I believe the reason is for this that current concerns over energy supply and demand security and uncertainties in the energy market require a reliable framework for trade and investment in the sector. This could be achieved most effectively through a multilateral legal framework. The rules and disciplines that apply to the energy trade are thus of the great strategic significance. To what extent can issues pertinent to the energy trade to be tackled through the existing rules? As was mentioned earlier, the WTO rules that govern the international trade are fully applicable to the trade in energy and energy products. Some argue that these rules were not specifically designed to tackle the energy issues. There has been a certain perception, as it was mentioned earlier, that WTO rules entail a traditional bias towards the market access. It is said that they do not sufficiently address the issues of export restriction and investment protection, commonly regarded as the most crucial and challenges in oil and gas. It is, however, important to stress that WTO provides a very effective and detailed framework, including for the settlement of disputes. The system is flexible enough to address the major issues in most sectors, including energy. There are, however, some distinctive features of the energy sector where energy-specific rules may be needed. These issues of specific relevance to the energy trade are addressed by the Energy Charter Treaty. The ECT is unique as its standalone international agreement that is specific to the energy sector. What is distinctive about the Energy Charter Treaty? First of all, it is the only multilateral investment protection treaty that contains a binding provision on the protection of investment in relation to the specifically to the energy sector. The investment provisions are further strengthened by the dispute settlement provision of the treaty, covering both state-to-state arbitration and investor-state dispute settlement. Secondly, the ECT rules integrates WTO rules with respect to the energy trade and extends to them to the non-WTO countries that are members of the ECT. For instance, such important energy producers as Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, and Turkmenistan. This has been proved to be useful stepping stone for countries towards the WTO, and it retains value for our constituencies since a significant volume of Eurasian energy trade and transit still takes place through countries that are not yet members of the WTO. Thirdly, with respect to the strategic importance of the issue of transit, the ECT lays down the principle of the freedom of energy transit and non-discrimination on the basis of origin, destination, ownership, or pricing of energy materials and products. The treaty's transit provisions are more detailed and designed to tackle energy transit matters than those in the GATT. Fourthly, I would also like to mention what the ECT does not do in order to correct some misconception and misperception which that may exist. The Energy Charter Treaty does not determine the structure of national energy markets. nor does dictate national energy policies or obliged member countries to open up their energy sector for foreign investors. Each member state is free to decide how and to what extent its national and sovereign energy resources will be developed, and also to the extent to which it will open its energy sector to foreign investment. Lastly, it does not impose mandatory third-party access to existing energy infrastructure. One can therefore argue whether this framework is as complete as it could be, and whether certain provision could have been improved with some redrafting, or whether they really reflect the intention of the negotiators. But it is, at the very least, a functioning instrument of international law. Moreover, the member of the Energy Charter decided to start a modernization process to address certain alleged shortcomings of the Energy Charter. The objective of modernization is to secure that full adherence of all the treaty parties to the common rules and to attract the new members, particularly major energy producing and consuming countries. As a part of the modernization process, the member states remain open to discuss initiatives coming from members, observers, and interested states to improve the international energy governance. A particular importance in the modernization process is given to the assessment to the ECT provision with regard to the low carbon investment. Some of the possible actions which are being considered to promote the transition to the low carbon economy concern the fossil fuel subsidy reform in the ECT constituency. The key issues to remember in this process is a need for a balance between interests of the different stakeholders. This is very difficult to achieve. A necessary condition for reaching this consensus, but this is a necessary condition to reaching this consensus. This is an area where the charter process can contribute. The process facilitates dialogue between the different group of players, consuming, producing, and transit countries at all stages of the economic development. From this point of view, the Energy Charter Treaty has a distinct role. No other energy relations organization provides a common platform for development and implementation of binding disciplines among these different group of stakeholders. But you may ask, what about the possibility for the new rules for the energy sector? Here I would like to make a following concluding remarks. First, efforts to regulate the international energy sector in the same way as another international trade community are likely to face difficulties. Energy is different because in the case of hydrocarbons, we are dealing with finite, non-renewable resources that are, first, vital to our modern way of life, and second, under the sovereign control of the relatively small and even smaller number of resource-owning countries. This means that there is an unavoidable political and strategic component to international energy trade. Secondly, in addressing the trade-related rules in the energy sector, some politically sensitive areas are likely to be encountered, including the question of the state sovereignty over the natural resources. The principle of sovereignty over the natural resources is enshrined in the Energy Charter Treaty. Decision on depletion policy, that is, on whether and how fast national resources are to be developed, are matters for resource-owning governments. International regulation is unlikely to succeed if it tries to encroach in a binding way on these national prerogatives. This was, in fact, experienced during the preceding rounds of the trade negotiations. Resource-owning countries objected on several occasions to the creation of the trade rules affecting ownership over natural resources. In WTO negotiation, a number of countries made it clear that the access to and use of the natural resources, as well as the right to regulate, should remain outside of the scope of the negotiation. Certainly, a starting point in negotiation of any additional rules on energy must be looked at the principles and the interests that are shared by countries along the energy value chain, including both producers and consumers. The Energy Charter provides a forum for energy policy discussion for these different group of countries. Dear colleagues, in conclusion, the Energy Charter Treaty has a unique role as the only energy-specific multilateral agreement that covers all major aspects of international energy turnover, the trade, transit, investment, and energy efficiency. The ECT provides a useful value added to existing general WTO framework that covers much larger constituency. The cornerstone of the ECT is non-derogation from the WTO. Both ECT and WTO frameworks complement each other, creating synergies without unnecessary duplication. On behalf of the Energy Charter and its constituency, I can only say that we would greatly welcome the opportunity for dialogue with WTO on this topic in the future as well. Thank you very much for your attention.